Well, we have some special guests here. There weren't always guests. Used to be members here, but you decided to leave us and go off to Spain. But now you're back here for your son's wedding.
That's right.
So this is Joshua and Naomi Smith, for those of you who don't know them. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Spain. What's your overall ministry?
Well, there's really two key parts. Well, first of all, it's great to be back. For all of you who haven't hugged yet, like big hugs from here and Spanish kisses and all those things that will make you feel uncomfortable. So I'm the director for the mission organization Reach Global in Spain, and we're relaunching a team in Madrid. And our ministry is really focused on two primary areas. First, we want to ask the question, how do we engage a whole city broadly but deeply? So Spain, Madrid has about 7 million people, with less than 1% of the Spanish population being evangelical. But there are churches there. So we want to partner and collaborate with existing churches and ministry organizations to help plant and develop churches and leaders and make disciples throughout the city. So that's like a citywide, how do we go broad but deep, honoring what has come before us and maybe pushing forward in some new areas. And then at a very local level, we want to live in a neighborhood that has a high traditional Spanish population and try to live intentionally and missionally in that neighborhood and see if the Lord might be willing to utilize us to bring men and women into saving faith. And that could be helping strengthen an existing church in the area. That could be planting a church. But that's what we're trying to do right now.
Okay. Well, Naomi, you look great, by the way.
I feel great.
Yeah.
Well, I say like my hair is blowing in the wind.
It's a great look for you. It's a great look for you. Now, last we spoke, you've just finished up chemotherapy, you know, for your cancer. Everybody wants to know how you're doing and how you're feeling.
Thank you, guys. And I'm doing so well, so well, so well. In fact, I often forget that I wasn't doing so well six months ago. So we've gotten sick these past 6 months, mm-hmm. but I have been the one who's gotten the least sick of all of our family. And so I think there are lingering, like, prayer fumes, like, hovering over me and keeping me healthy. I've been so good.
She was getting kind of, like, semi-experimental injections as part of her treatment, and it may have produced, like, superpower.
Yeah, that's right.
We kept asking the doctors, when do the superpowers kick in? It happened.
Okay. Now we know.
We'll take it. So, as far as we know, all the markers are good and in the clear?
I scheduled, where's cancer center people? I scheduled some checkups. This week to make sure I have to get a heart, an echocardiogram.
Okay.
And another mammogram. I have to do the responsible things to just for maintenance, just to make sure I'm doing good. But I'm doing, markers are good.
And an update on Roma, you had her obviously leaving her friends. Is she with her friends right now?
I did. I saw like a little bit.
Hey, girl.
Roma, good to see you.
Roma's been rocking it.
Yeah.
Like, we were able to get into the school we wanted to get into near our neighborhood. It's about a 10-minute walk from our apartment. And she was, like, incredibly courageous and jumped in. And her Spanish is, like, pretty much perfect now. And she's made friends in her class. And she likes them, and they like her. So we are really, really grateful for how the Lord's given Roma courage to press in. Because it's a pretty hard thing to go to a new country and speak a new language in the middle of the school year. But she's done an incredible job, and we're really grateful. And her friendships in the school are also opening up doors of relationship for us with Spaniards in our community.
And she's thumbs up. You're glad to be back? Yeah, we were driving, like our first morning in Emporia, we were driving from the Dorsey Airbnb and into town, and I think there was, like, seeing all those fields was like balm to her soul. And she said, I don't think I'm a city girl. I'm glad to see all these fields. So it's
and we're like, we can love both places.
So what is it? Is there like a, does she miss Brahms? Like, what was like, we have to go to this place?
Probably everything. Everything. Yeah. You know, it is hard to live in an apartment because you always have to be thinking about how much noise you're making. So I think there is something really wonderful that she misses, we miss, being in a home where we don't have to put on slippers when we're upstairs. To not bother the neighbors.
We live on the 8th story of an apartment building, so we're like way, way up there. But I'd say what she misses most are her friends, here.
Yeah.
So they're pretty amazing. Thanks to Roma's friends for being amazing.
Yeah. I've seen that you have one set of siblings there, then, yeah. Okay. Roma, we're really glad to have you back. Glad you're with your friends. So summarize the last 7 months. So you left in December. We haven't seen you since. What happened between now and then? Because I know a lot of chaos. You had visa stress. I mean, everything was like up in the air, but here you are alive. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that happened. The Lord was gracious in providing for us in each step of the way. So even with like the cancer and the visa process, the Lord kept giving us just enough room to keep moving forward, to get our visa just the right time. The Lord opened the door for an apartment that we were able to move in December, which actually is really difficult to find apartments in Madrid. There's a huge housing crisis. So the fact we were able to find one in our neighborhood, I mean, it did cost 50% more than we were planning, I think. But we were super grateful. We moved right in. Really, the last 7 months has been largely focused on developing an understanding of what's already going on in the city in terms of ministry there. So most of our time is spent meeting with churches and missionaries and organizations. We want to recognize what's already happening, what are the strengths of the church right now, and then what are the needs and opportunities, and then how can we partner with one another, and that just takes time. So we have meeting after meeting after meeting with churches, with pastors, with missionaries, with organizations. We spent long weekends with a denomination, with a church planting training group, with a local church. It's just investment. And there's no shortcut to building trust. So knowledge and trust take time. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're sort of pouring ourselves into now. And that's our commitment for the first year or two especially, is getting a really deep understanding of what's happening so we can build upon a strong foundation and hopefully produce ministry that will last for the long run. And maybe need more at the local level. Mm-hmm. Want to share what that looks like?
And we're trying to spend as much time locally as we can. So I'm school for sure. I'm showing up early. Well, actually, usually we're running late to school. But showing up early for pickup and making sure my earbuds are out, making sure we're lingering, around the schoolyard, where we're figuring out what park Roma's friends play at. We didn't realize this, that there's this gorgeous, amazing park about a 10-minute walk from our house. It's filled with people all the time. And we kept going there in the afternoons and looking for classmates. And there were thousands of kids, it felt like, but no one from her school. And then we realized that all of the kids from her school actually meet at the smaller park that's a block away. And those are the sorts of things where, and you go right after school in the afternoons, and that park is filled with all the kids from Roma's school. So I think
it took like 2 or 3 months to figure that out.
It took a long time to figure that out.
Where are all the kids?
We're spending time walking our streets, trying to take note of what the rhythms are of the city, and yeah.
So what's been the best surprise since you've been back?
The best surprise has been, there's been a level of openness among some that we never, towards the gospel and relationship, that we never experienced in our 8 years in Pamplona. There's still it's a highly resistant society, and we're not sure if this is a change in culture or it's a change in location, because before we lived in a different city in Spain, and now we're in Madrid, the capital.
But what's the time gap?
The time gap is about 15 years.
Okay.
So from the time you left northern Spain to the time you're moving to Madrid, it's about a 15-year change.
Okay.
significant cultural change from those cities, and then obviously 15 years have gone by. But one, the best surprise for us has been one particular relationship. We'll call them Jose and Maria. And when we first got to Madrid, the Roma school, her class has a WhatsApp chat, like a telephone chat. And I popped on and I said, hey, we're new to Madrid. If anyone would like to take us by the hand and show us a city, like, please reach out. And no one responded with any offer, except for one person wrote, Vermut. Like, what does that mean? Is that a joke? Is that an offer? And we didn't know. And that was the end of that story.
Did you ask AI?
we figured out what it was, a thing, but we didn't know what it meant. And so a month later, we're at a birthday party of a kid in the class at a park. And we meet this guy, and it was the Vermut guy. And so we ask him, what does that mean? He says, well, every Saturday between like 11 and 1, like true Madrileños, people from Madrid, they go out for a drink called Vermut. And it's like a super traditional thing in that particular city. And then what he did was he invited us out on a Saturday for a Spanish vermut, which is a big deal because we're like being invited into his world, which is really hard oftentimes for Spaniards to welcome outsiders into their world. They're very closed in terms of they have their friends from their childhood, and they have their family, and they oftentimes don't want anything else. So he invited us out for this very Spanish experience in a Spanish cafe, and it was just this like beautiful thing. And then a month or so later, he invited us out again, but this time he invited us to a cafe that his wife had grown up as a child going to, and they knew the owners. Like, we entered into the world anew. And then, after having that vermut, they said, well, let's go to lunch at a place we really like. So then they brought us to lunch, and then they said, hey, we're meeting some Spanish friends at a park. Why don't you join us? So then we went to a park, and we met these three couples that they're friends with, and then this guy, we'll call him Jose, he said, hey, Joshua, I bet you guys can't guess what Joshua does for work. And then they all guessed, and then I got to share what I do. And then we had like half hour, hour-long conversation about the gospel. And so it's just been this beautiful gift of the Lord, providing this friendship with this couple. In fact, we spent Monday night with them. We had dinner with them in their home, which in Pamplona, it took us like 8 years to get into someone's home. Yeah. They invited us in, and we watched the World Cup with them. And so that relationship has actually been a really incredible opportunity for friendship. And they're also, they've been a bridge to other relationships in the community.
Jose I've told him, like, okay, part of my job this year is cultural study. I'm going to museums. I'm reading a book about Madrid's history. I'm trying to figure out what does someone in Madrid value? What are they afraid of? What are they? And he was mocking me last week. And he's like, just stop reading your books. Stop reading your books. You have to hang out. He does. This is like Spanish. You have to hang out with us. Someone from Madrid. I'm like, We're doing it. Okay, keep inviting us. So and it really has. Obviously, you can only do so much with a book study. But sometimes, and you want to hang out with a Spaniard, but sometimes you don't know how. And so, really, Jose and Maria have been the people who have opened that door. And that has been the best surprise. We did not expect that 7 months in, we would be invited into their home, into their friend group, and we're just astounded.
So what's the profile of us, of somebody from Madrid? Like, we have profiles of people from L.A., from Kansas, New York, you know. But if somebody's from Madrid, what can you expect?
That's actually a really hard question because Madrid's changed a lot in the past 20 years. So when we moved to Spain in 2002 originally, we weren't in Madrid. But at that point, Madrid, for example, had a population, an immigrant population of about 5%. So 95% of people in Madrid were from Spain. Today, at least 25% of the population of Madrid is non-Spanish.
Wow.
So there's been a huge influx of immigration, especially from Latin America, from South America. And that is radically changing how the city functions and what the profile of someone in Madrid actually is. So when we talk about old Spaniards, there's a term. If someone's been from Madrid for like three generations, their family, they're called cats. They're called gatos. And they're like this unique breed of people who are deeply madrileño, and they have vermut on Saturdays, and they sort of have this really traditional way of thinking and functioning. But that's a rare breed that of people. They're like a special class. And then everybody else, they're Spaniards who have migrated to the large city, and they're migrants who have migrated to the large city. So in some ways, I mean, they're hard workers. They value tradition. I mean, you think of a giant urban center with 7 million people, you're going to have all those dynamics. You have financial centers, you have poor centers. But one of the challenges, we're still figuring out, what does it mean for someone to be from Madrid? What is that profile? It's really diverse.
One thing that does crop up again and again, anytime I can get a Spaniard and have a conversation with them, I do ask them, like, what does it mean to be from Madrid? And I'm still trying to figure it out. I think most people have a hard time even articulating it, but one thing that has cropped up again and again is that Madrileños feel like they're a city that welcomes people.
Okay.
And I think that probably that's why when you see the growth over the past several hundred years, it has grown really significantly. And I think the people who have told me that take pride in saying we're a place that welcomes people. Okay. And absolutely, I think in comparison to Pamplona, we've experienced that citywide dynamic. Hmm. Obviously, we've experienced it at a really personal level with José and María, but at a citywide level, we do observe it. And it's more common to say, to meet someone a Spaniard who moved to the city, or their parents moved to the city, whereas in Pamplona, it was like you were from Pamplona and your grandparents and great-grandparents were from Pamplona. There was less of that. It wasn't a place where people were moving to.
Well, as a culture, and definitely in Madrid, people do, they high value family, maybe even less their own marriage as their actual parents and siblings oftentimes. Like, that is like the core family. They highly value it. They'll meet every week oftentimes with their family. They value the friendships they've had for their whole life. They call it their cuadrilla. So it's their friends they've had since they were two. And they'll get together, you know, every Thursday night with those friends for the past 30, 40 years. So they have these deep connected relationships with their friends of old, with their family. They love life on the street. So they don't
that's a huge value.
They love being on a patio, on a terrace, having a drink in the afternoon, or having olives or something, or tapas. So they don't like going into your home or going to their home. So that's a very, very private place. So much of life ministry has to happen outside in the public arena. But they love that. They're on the streets all the time. They walk everywhere. So it provides opportunity to engage people. But that close friendship they have and the close family relationship is beautiful, but also means it's hard to break into relationship for outsiders. So they're way more friendly than people in Pamplona were. Mm-hmm. But we're still figuring out what does that mean in terms of actual deep relationship. It's one thing to say, hey, anyone who moves to Madrid is from Madrid now. It's another thing to let you into their deepest kind of sort of heart relationships. And that will happen regardless over time. And that's what we're trying to figure out.
But also, we might come back in 2 years and totally disagree with everything that we just said. We reserve the right to, I wish our Spanish friends were right here and that they could nuance the things that we said or correct us or so.
So you got into a gospel conversation. What was the reception? Like, is there an openness to it? Are they Catholic agnostics?
Yeah, Madrid is way more Catholic than Pamplona ever was. So in Spanish history, you had the Inquisition. So the Catholic Church joined with the Spanish government to literally imprison people for hundreds of years. That only ended in like the 1840s. And then you had a dictator, General Franco, rule Spain until he died in 75. And he, similar, joined with the Catholic Church. So to be Spanish meant to be Catholic. But in where we lived before in Pamplona, they were like against the government. And so there was a different dynamic. But Madrid is the center of the empire. And so the Catholic faith is way stronger, it seems like. Catholic Church is actually filled with people. So that's a change. But they're very postmodern Catholics as a whole, where you can kind of believe most things and you'll kind of be okay. But what we found in our conversations, Spaniards, we hear, they like professionals. So if you're a doctor, people are going to listen to you about medical things, and you aren't going to question your doctor because you're not an expert. Our sense is that they actually view us as religious experts. that's something we're wondering. So we've had multiple conversations where people have asked us, what does it mean to be Protestant? And that's what opens the door for a gospel presentation. And as a whole, when we have those conversations, I think people are pretty intrigued. Like, they don't know at all what Protestants are or evangelicals are. They don't really have a framework for that. There is right now in the media, in the newspapers and such, there's actually been an attack against evangelicals. There's a series of articles mocking or attacking evangelicals, latching on to like neo-Pentecostals, like extreme things that have been brought from Latin America. But there's a negative sense. But even that, most Spaniards don't really know what an evangelical believes. So with those people at the park, when I shared that I was a kind of a Protestant pastor, I said more than that. But they want to know, what does that mean? What's the difference between a Protestant and evangelical?
Shutting down the conversation.
No, they weren't shutting it down.
They're not shutting down the conversation.
In Pamplona, they always shut it down immediately. In Pamplona, I mean, every time, there was no next step. They didn't want to talk to us anymore. We found people to be intrigued. We actually had a classmate came over to our apartment related to Roma's birthday, and we're talking with our mom, and after a while, the mom's out of the blue asks, so what does it mean to be Protestant? I don't know anybody who's a Protestant. I have no idea what you believe. And she was genuinely curious to know about us. Not necessarily any of them curious, it seems like, for their own hearts. They make very clear, I don't believe. Yes. I don't want to.
Absolutely. They're like, just so you know, I'm asking you this, not because anything other than data collection. You know.
But there is a curiosity, and that's a huge open door. We never experienced that kind of curiosity in Pamplona. So we're excited to see where that curiosity goes. And actually, with the four couples at the park I got to share with, one of the women who is an agnostic, at the end, she's like, I think I'm more of a Protestant. So maybe we're tapping into something, because there is a certain population that is pretty critical of the Catholic Church and the hierarchy and the tradition and what's done to Spain. And when we can say, just very directly, I reject the authority of the Pope and of the Catholic institution, and we hold firmly to whatever the Bible says, and it stands in judgment of ourselves and of our own institutions, mm-hmm. and that gives us access, actually, to the Word of God in a way that we can evaluate what's true and what's not true. And that's one of the ways we want to push people forward, is to show the authority of the Bible, and that becomes what gives us knowledge and actually critiques us and our institutions.
So are they cultural Catholics, devoted Catholics? Because there are some people, like, do they actually believe in an afterlife, or is it just, we don't really think about it, it's just part of being a Spaniard?
I think we're still figuring that out. I think there are more genuine Catholic believers in Madrid than there were in Pamplona.
Okay.
That's our sense. At the same time, like this woman who asked us about it in our home, part of the conversation was, we touched on the Mass. So in the Catholic Church, the Mass, or the Lord's table, they believe the bread and the wine actually become the body and blood of Jesus. You're actually eating his flesh. You're actually drinking his blood, not symbolically. And I mentioned that as a difference, and she's like, well, no one believes that. So she would be a Catholic, but she's like, no one believes that the bread and wine are actually his body and blood. I'm like, no, literally, you have to believe that to be Catholic. She's like, no one believes that. I'm like, okay, you say so. So I think there are various levels of what they actually believe and what it means to be Catholic. So you'd have radically committed to the highest levels of the Catholic faith, and then you have a whole range down to, well, I was baptized Catholic. And so I am. And that is a difference between evangelical faith and Roman Catholicism. In Roman Catholicism, you're baptized as a baby, and that washes away your sin, and that makes you Catholic, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. Whereas for us, you can only be a Christian because you've chosen to entrust your life to Jesus. And that's a very different way of thinking about religion and faith.
So tell me about just the Protestant church that you've interacted with. Like, you mentioned that there's Pentecostals there? Is that kind of the dominant evangelical expression? What have you guys found?
Yeah, well, I'll say the positive. I think as a whole, some changes we've seen in the last 20 years is the Spanish evangelical church right now is way more open to collaborating with one another and way less tribal than they were 20 years ago.
Okay.
And that provides new opportunities to partner for the gospel in our neighborhoods that really we never saw 20 years ago. Also, Spaniards are very traditional. But there seems to be an openness to rethinking their tradition. I don't mean biblical tradition. I mean just traditional ways of doing things. So instead of doing things the way they've always done, they're saying, let's reevaluate things in light of the scriptures and in light of what best communicates the gospel. And that creates, that's a new opportunity in the country. And there's a new emphasis on things like church planting, which we never heard 20 years ago. That was very rare. But there's a real renewed emphasis on evangelism, starting new communities of Jesus in cities and in villages throughout the country. So in that sense, there's some really positive developments. The other positive development, this is qualified, is that when 20 years ago, there's less than 1% of the population was evangelical. Today, that population has more than doubled. About 2% of the population is evangelical, but they're entirely non-Spanish. So the positive side is it's grown, it's more than doubled in size, and there's a lot of excitement about that. But the reality is it's not Spanish. There are actually fewer Spanish-born evangelicals today than there were 30 years ago. The number of Spanish believers have decreased, and the growth has been entirely through migrant populations, and especially Latin Americans. And so that those Latin Americans, either they come and they're believers, or they become believers in Spain, and that brings excitement and energy. It also brings a lot of Pentecostal and neo-Pentecostal expressions, which is becoming increasingly dominant in Spain, which is not the normal history of the Spanish church. Mm-hmm. And then do you want to share a lot some of maybe the challenges of that migrant dynamic in the church?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So there's absolutely a beauty to being able to see a diverse population within the church body, right? That's what we know, that the gospel, the gospel is gives us that beauty, and it's a powerful testimony to a God who unifies and reconciles. And yet it's come with complications. And increasingly we hear again and again how hard it is that from our Spanish believers, who are both encouraged, they have these mixed feelings, where they're encouraged, but they also feel like their church isn't what it used to be, and part of that is that the immigrant population that's moving into the churches is maintaining a lot of its own cultural forms of church, and we were talking yesterday about how it could be compared to if here in Emporia, all of a sudden there was a significant influx of Chinese immigrants, and then suddenly 75% of this church body was made up of Chinese immigrants, and the modes of music and of prayer and also
more pot stickers and less fried chicken for potlucks.
I mean, because I think a lot of times we think these are Spanish speakers going to a Spanish-speaking country, and you think, well, when I go to Spain, where's the salsa? Right? Because
no salsa in Spain.
Don't you have all these other things here? But you realize that's Mexican,
right?
Which is same language,
kind of,
but it is a very different culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it really has become difficult for Spaniards to feel at home in their church buildings.
Interesting.
And then it's very difficult for them to invite their unbelieving friends into that because it feels like you're not necessarily just, it's not, you're not inviting them into a gospel community. Initially, it can feel like they're being invited into a completely culturally foreign community.
So you could imagine if 75% of this church became filled with Chinese believers, it'd be amazing, right? Mm-hmm. But you would begin to feel this tension of like you're losing your identity as a church in Emporia, Kansas. If you try to invite your very Kansan friends to church and they show up and it's 75% Chinese, it's going to feel like another barrier. So there's this tension in the Spanish church because they're sort of losing their Spanish identity. But they are growing, but that growth is also a barrier to reaching Spaniards. Hmm. So one thing we're really committed to, as we develop a missionary team, as more missionaries work with us, we want to work with diverse populations within Spain. So there are Muslim immigrants coming in that we want to share the gospel with them. We want to help strengthen the Latino church in Spain. But for Naomi and I, we have a special heart for Spaniards, and we really want to see Spaniards come to know the beauty and love and truth of Jesus. And so one thing we're doing as we look for partnerships in Madrid is we're trying to find churches that still sort of smell like Spain. And that's hard to put your finger on exactly, but something about how they function still represents Spanish culture in an appropriate but biblical way, and they still have a real heart to make sure they're reaching their neighbors with the gospel. And that's a minority of churches maintain that. But when we find those churches, we're saying, okay, how can we help partner together to continue to communicate the gospel to Spanish men and women? And then eventually, I also would love to help the more Latin American churches take on more of a missionary identity, because most of them migrate to Spain for economic reasons, like maybe Mexicans or people from El Salvador migrate to the United States. They're not moving to Spain as missionaries. Mm-hmm. They're moving there for work and for a better life because there's unique opportunity. But what that means is when they come, they maintain their traditions. So a Spanish church with 75% Latinos now would be just like a Latino church in Colombia. What I would love to help those Latin Americans do is take on a missionary mentality to become a Jew to the Jew and a Greek to the Greeks, and to begin to adjust their own lifestyle in a way that doesn't cause them to deny their history and their Latin background, but does help them to learn how to more intentionally and contextually love their Spanish neighbors for the sake of the gospel. I think that's actually a potential open door in the future.
Is there tension between Spaniards and immigrants, like what you've seen in some other European countries?
There is, yeah. It's going to depend who you talk to, kind of like in the States, right? There's going to be a mix of perspectives on immigration. Mm. And right now, actually, there's a really key political moment because the current socialist government of Spain just essentially gave an amnesty to anyone, any migrant in Spain who is there undocumented who happened to be there on December 1st. No matter what, if you were there on December 1st this last year, then
you get there on December 1st.
We were there, but we were documented, so no. It doesn't apply to us.
No.
It's more difficult to go legally than it is to go sort of illegally, and Spaniards know that too. Mm-hmm. But what that means is they thought it would be about 500,000 people would become legalized, but it's actually looking like 1 million.
Wow.
And
how many people live in Spain?
I have to look it up. I think around 50 million.
Okay.
And then in Madrid, it's about 7 million. Okay. So you're looking at a huge influx of people who are already there. But that adds to issues of, like, there's a huge housing crisis. There are not enough homes, and so the rent is shooting up. And what we're paying for our apartment is an ungodly sum of money. But that's true for everybody. So it's pushing people out of the cities, into the outskirts. That means travel, cars. There are fewer jobs. So in one sense, Spain is very welcoming to the outsider. And they have a long history with Latin America. Mm-hmm. And they feel kind of bad about what they did oftentimes to Latin America in the past. So this is sort of a way to, like, paying them back for what they did, like, by welcoming them. But yeah. It does add to an ongoing economic crisis. And so you're going to find people who are totally welcoming and people who feel really uncomfortable with what this means for the country.
Mm-hmm. I think ideologically, they're very welcoming. Yeah. They want to be a people, a place, a country that welcomes other people. And I do. I like that. And then when the rubber meets the road, I think then it's... Mm-hmm. Then that's challenged and that's uncomfortable. So I think that's where I hear the tension is their lived experience and their and really like what they want to value.
Mm-hmm. So what have you guys been doing? Have you been going to different churches on Sundays?
Yep. I would say at the very beginning it was a different church every week. And now we're still, as we meet different pastors, and mm-hmm. we're invited into their churches. So we're still visiting new churches, but we're having a lot more repeats now.
Okay.
As we develop kind of an initial click, an initial mutual understanding that we might want to partner more significantly together in the future. So, yeah, I would say. Yes, we're still visiting new churches every Sunday, but we're having some more repeats.
And some of, like, our approach right now, we're kind of like the pioneers right now. So as we have future missionaries join our team, they're not going to be going to different churches every week. We're committed to working in and through local churches. But it's kind of like if Paul goes to a new city and someone says, well, what church are you a member of? Well, the Apostle Paul wasn't there to be a member of one local church. He was there to help plant churches and develop churches. And we're not the Apostle Paul, but it is that sort of apostolic missionary mentality of we're pioneering something, and that means we need to understand who's here. And so we'll eventually probably have a tighter relationship with one particular church, but we'll continue to work with lots of different churches. Okay. But to do that, we have to know who they are. And then as we have missionaries join our team, we'll place them with local churches as learners and as a way of serving. But we have to actually have a trusting relationship with those churches to do that. So I will add, there is one church that we're attending more often. And this is actually a really amazing opportunity that was unexpected. Our earlier question of unexpected things. There is actually a church about a 15-20-minute walk from our apartment that we didn't know existed before we moved there, despite all of our study. And it's actually one of the oldest churches in Madrid. It was started in the 1870s, not too long after the Inquisition. Its building was built, I think, in 1946. So it survived, like, post-Inquisition. It survived the dictatorship under Franco, where evangelicals were actively persecuted. Mm. And it's right in the middle of the city. And so when we found this church, we're like, we got to visit. Their website, we couldn't tell, are they open anymore? Mm. Are they liberal? Like, we didn't know. So we just showed up. That's kind of what we do. We just showed up to what seemed to be a church service. And we found this really beautiful group of like 30 people. Mm. And they'd just gone through a really hard time. And they're in this moment of sort of a renewal as a church. It's actually a Plymouth Brethren church. So they don't have paid pastors. They have a team of four elders. And they have this history behind them. But it's this really beautiful group of people who had a time of transition. And it's one of the most historic churches in Madrid. And they preach the gospel. So we've started to get to know them. We've had meetings with their elders. We went on a church retreat with them. I met on Friday with one of their elders before flying out here. And it's been this really incredible opportunity where these elders are saying, we see God providentially bringing you here at this moment in time. Mm-hmm. And we are happy to have you come whenever you can. Mm-hmm. And we also want to encourage you and help you in any way you can as you help reach the city with the gospel. Mm-hmm. So that's slowly becoming perhaps our sort of default church to go to.
Okay.
And we're excited to see where that goes. Because Spain is so traditional, the opportunity of having like an ancient church in the neighborhood that's a key church we're partnering with mm-hmm. taps into that sense of tradition and not being foreign. Because this is a very Spanish group historically. And they've gone through some hard things that they're having to work through. But they're at a point of renewal. And we would love to partner with them and them with us as part of this gospel renewal. And we're in ongoing dialogue about what that might mean.
Do you ever read that book, Agape Leadership, by R.C.C. Chapman?
Yeah, so Chapman actually...
Was he one of the people who helped start that?
So Chapman helped start the Brethren movement in Spain. Yeah.
Okay.
So he would have been a part in some way of the founding of this church. And the Brethren movement in Spain is one of the like healthier movements in the country in terms of biblical faithfulness. Many Spanish churches have actually become progressive and no longer actually believe the gospel, even among evangelicals, even though they're a small percentage. Or they become embarrassed by certain doctrines. So like pretty much all Spanish churches are egalitarian. It's almost a given. Like they're just embarrassed by some of those elements of what the Bible teaches. But it seems like the Brethren Church is actually a pretty healthy group.
Yeah.
And that's where we're excited to partner with them. We met one of the key leaders of another church as well. And man, we just had a ton in common.
Yeah.
They even have some of the broader Brethren churches have a strategy for church planting in the country. So we want to actually figure out what their strategy is and maybe we can play a role in coming alongside them to realize their own vision for planting and developing churches. All this is like maybe 2 years from now, we'll be like, well, that didn't work. But these doors that seem to be opening where you have a conversation and you're like, I think there's sort of a click here. I think we're on the same page. And now the issue is we need to get to know each other more because trust takes time. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't trust us right away. And we don't know them well enough right away, so it's going to take time to walk alongside one another and see what God does. But I think there's a ton of potential there for that network of churches.
Yeah, so what's been some of the challenges you guys have faced? I remember reading your support letter and you were sick for 3 months or something like that.
Yes. Honestly, whenever you move to a new country, like, you get sick. Even when we moved back from Spain the first time, we've been out of the United States long enough that we got sick and we moved here. Just, you're not used to the germs anymore. But it was brutal the first 4 months. I spent weeks on end in bed. I was super skinny, not just from walking all the time. You do get healthier living in Europe, typically. I have partial hearing loss in my right ear. I lost my hearing entirely for about 6 weeks. I just woke up one morning, and I was bleeding out of my right ear for a day and a half. You're talking like stomach issues. I'm actually, my left eye right now, I've a vision issue that's arisen, skin issues. It was like this brutal week after week after week. Roma missed weeks on end of school because you're so sick.
I was like, quit your whining. I'm fine.
Naomi's like, chemo power. So it sounds like whining, but really it was you're starting over and you're trying to make connections, and I can't go to church, can't meet with people. I'm just in bed, like, laid up. So that was a hard, discouraging time. We knew it was going to happen, like, theoretically, but it was worse than
not
I expected.
Like, yeah.
But the last 2 months, we've been pretty healthy, and I'm really, really grateful for that. It's like this, it's like freed us to just be able to engage people, to attend things, and not be throwing up. Or the other end.
Yeah, Naomi will weigh in on this.
Well, building relationships, when you're having to build all of your relationships from zero, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And it's hard. So I think that's been the hardest part for me, because you don't have your rhythms, you don't have your people to go to, the place where you're understood. And we were made to be in community and to know and be known, and just where all of our relationships are starting from zero.
I'll mention this a little bit in my sermon as well, but it really is starting from scratch. Like, you don't know anybody, you have no local support, you feel out of control, you just can't do basic things. Like, you try to get on a bus, and maybe you have the right document, maybe you don't. Maybe you end up at the right place. Maybe you don't. We once went to a church. We got into the metro, and we're going along, and we're like, we are not going the right direction. We're on the wrong metro entirely. We don't even know how we got on that metro. So you just feel sort of out of control all the time, and the stress levels is high.
Yeah.
I probably mentioned this before, but there's actually a study done years ago. There's a basic stress test. I'm sure I've mentioned this at some point. But there's a basic stress test that the doctors use to sort of see where you're at, and you answer some basic questions. And years ago, a study was done on missionaries who would take the stress test. And I think something like, if you have a 200 or over, then you're like 50% or maybe double the likelihood of having a major health event, like a heart attack or whatever. So over 200, you need to have some change of lifestyle. You need to rest more, you need to change your pattern of life, whatever. But the average missionary in the first year or two was like at a 900, I think.
Wow.
And then the average missionary all the time is at like 500 to 600. And it's just the level of loss of natural rhythms and life support, the constant change. Even things like getting books for Roma for school. We arrived in the middle of the year, and there's like no system to get books. Her teacher didn't know. The school didn't know. No one knew. But Roma kept getting, not yelled at, but scolded by her teachers for not having the right material. And we're like, we can't figure out what to do. And that sense of being out of control is difficult.
Yeah, because normally you have a couple years of language acquisition, and that's what you do. So you have purpose every day. I'm going to work on the language, and then you kind of ramp up the ministry that way. But you're just kind of thrown in. You know the language, know the culture, get going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you even just go about just structuring your day to make, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I would say a huge temptation for us is to be busy, to do stuff, and to sign up for anything. Right now, because we have gotten to know so many different ministries, really there are some opportunities. We could do teach English at the Muslim Center. We could, in one sense, we could. There's a lot we can do,
mm-hmm.
and then we would feel like, oh yeah, we're doing stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we've had to make sure to not say yes to things just for the sake of like that's the satisfaction of feeling like we're doing stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I think I don't know if I really answered your question, but what we keep having to remind ourselves to not just do any, to not just do random stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, Joshua, you say about like the positive stuff that we are doing.
No, it is. I mean, what we do is we're trying to figure out who's there and what they're doing. So we find that out by talking to people who recommend somebody else, who recommend somebody else. So I send these like random text messages to people saying, hey, this person told me about you. This is who I am. I have a letter of recommendation that I send, which actually is uncommon, but has opened up huge doors. I have two written in Spanish and two written in English by different groups. Mm-hmm. So we're not these random wandering false prophets. Yeah. but it really is, it's about trying to find out who these people are, putting myself in contact with them, and then seeing where it goes. So in one situation that led to me doing an 8-hour teaching through the general epistles for a Bible Institute of leaders from all sorts of different churches. And that was because one ministry organization asked me to do that. And it wasn't actually the most important thing I could ever do, but it allowed me to serve them and put me in contact with a whole new group of people. Mm-hmm. And I just keep following that train. This person, these are this person, these are this person. That Brethren Church, when we started attending and we met with the elders, and they were going to have a church retreat, and we said, we want to come. They said, okay. So we went on a church retreat. We met another church that was with them, and the primary speaker was a key leader at a different church. He became a contact. We haven't been able to meet, but we're going to meet when we get back. Yeah. We just follow the trail. And the hard thing with that is you can't schedule your week very well that way because it depends on everyone else, right? I have to follow everyone else's schedule, when they're available, when they're not available. And we just trust the Lord's providential leading in terms of when things will happen. Another piece we try to spend one day a week, or at least half a day, just visiting a different neighborhood. It's a giant city. There's 7 million people. It's made up of these little different regions, and we'll spend a day just walking up and down the streets just to have a sense of how this neighborhood functions. Or there's a church that we met, and the pastor actually wants to plant a new church in a new area. So we just spent a day walking through that neighborhood, and I sent him some messages with our evaluation of the neighborhood and opportunities and needs. So some of it is built-in rhythm of exploring new neighborhoods. Some is simply just messaging people. Some is meeting with them whenever they can, and then we see where it goes.
So, obviously, 2 years you might have a different answer to this question, but so you're building this network, pulling people together, like big picture as you kind of just dream and about the future, right? What opportunities do you kind of foresee as far as bringing churches together to do this or this? I mean, what are you, I mean, and we're not going to hold you to it, but just right now, I mean, what do you think can happen?
Yeah, we do have some ideas. I'll qualify it. You know this. But the whole idea right now is we're trying to figure that out. What is a thing that's going to be most helpful for the church in Spain? What is the thing that's going to be most helpful to strengthen it, to equip it, and to reach non-believers with the gospel?
Sure.
And so we want to be slow to make final decisions because we're still in the learning process. That's kind of like we got to build a foundation, and if we go too quick, we will lay a poor foundation and won't last. So that's just qualifying that. You know that. Mm-hmm. I could imagine us playing a key role in helping train and mentor and coach church planters and church planting teams.
Okay.
And there are some specific groups that are already talking with us about doing that. In fact, I might be a mentor for a group this fall.
Okay.
I think that's at the regional level. I think we can play a significant role in helping bring like-minded people together in some new ways. There are some glimpses of that, but I don't see a full network unpacked in that way. I think we can help some groups take the theoretical and put it into practice. So the idea of, like, we like the idea of living purposefully or missionally in our neighborhoods, but we don't know how to do it. I think we can help train them on what that looks like to live the gospel in daily life. And then actually, we have a couple who have officially been accepted by Reach Global to join our team. Uh-huh. And he has a degree in counseling from the Master's University. He just got a master's degree from, I think, Southeastern. And he's going to be helping a church in Washington develop a biblical counseling program as he raises support to join us.
Okay.
And so I'm actually excited to have them come. And not necessarily bring, like, biblical counseling versus psychology. I actually don't want that battle. But what I think there's an opportunity for is to have him to come and help churches and leaders think through how to apply the gospel to all of life. Mm-hmm. That's really, biblical counseling is about discipleship. It's about applying the lordship to Jesus and the good news of the gospel to everything. And I think his training, would provide an open door to train leaders and churches in that area, and that could be really life-giving to the church. Because I do think there's a disconnect oftentimes in Spanish churches between like the gospel and the rest of life. And they don't always know how to bridge those worlds. Like, it's a very psychologized society.
But go to a therapist for change.
Yeah, that's kind of like the basic model I think you would have in Spain. So as we develop trust with churches and organizations, even denominations, one of the things we're doing is we're laying the groundwork for someone like him to come in and help offer that training in new ways. There is one more. We're developing a relationship with a whole denomination, about 100 churches, who also have about 20 church plants. And we've become friends with their director for church planting, missions, and evangelism. In fact, we're going to spend a week on going on vacation with them for a week at their parents' place, which is another, who does that? They just offered it to us. That's a huge step of trust. Yeah. But we've been asked to, I'm going to lead the teaching and devotionals for a mission trip this summer in southern Spain in a village. And then Naomi's been asked actually to help train the women in the whole denomination potentially in both evangelism and how to study and teach the Bible. So those sort of networks could open doors across the country for training and development, both for me and for Naomi.
But I want to say it's a baby plan.
Yeah, sure.
And so that's come about really with someone recommended that I talk to Dulce because Dulce's over all the women, and so I took the train out to Dulce's apartment, and we spent 3 hours, and she brainstormed with me, and she told me what she does, and I told her, you know, what I do, and she said, all right, well, let me think about this. Let me pitch an idea to my women's team, and then 2 months later, she said, I heard back from the women's team. Could you teach this conference, women's conference, could you be the keynote speaker? And I was like, no, that's not my skill set. But let's keep talking about what my skill set is. And I didn't want to ruin that partnership right off the bat by, doing the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So she talked to her ladies, and they one weekend would work for one and not for the other. And then we got together for another 3 hours, 2 months later. And right now it looks like, okay, yes, September 21st is the day that I'm gonna have I have 2.5 hours to do what I want. And so what am I, equip the women in some way. And from there, if they like it, we'll move forward. So it's all
But having said that, I mean, this is the thing. We show up in a city of 7 million people in a country of about 50 million, and we basically don't know anybody.
Yeah.
We are these randos who just show up in a giant city.
And we tell people how amazing we are.
they don't believe us.
You don't even have to tell. Come on, let's just be honest.
But this is the thing. So we're 7 months in, and it's part of the beauty of what God's doing, a glimpse of these open doors, and Naomi has a relationship with a women's director for a whole denomination who's asking her to provide training. We have a relationship with the head of all church planting and evangelism missions of the entire denomination, and they're asking us to provide training, and they're offering us friendship. Another Bible Institute is asking us to train all their students at times. Another church planting training organization welcomes us in to see how they do training, and the doors open to become mentors in the fall. That's faster than we ever imagined, honestly, in terms of the opportunities. So now what we need is to figure out where should we focus our time and energy, because we can't do everything.
Gotcha. Well, we have a few more minutes. Prayer request for you guys? How can I pray for you?
Well, we were talking about this, and really, we'd ask for the same thing we asked for 7 months ago, which is favor and friendship. It really hasn't changed. We need God's favor with the believing community so that we can develop trust and relationship and figure out how we can serve one another for gospel ends. And we need favor with the non-believing community, that people might open their hearts to us, that we might be able to learn from them, that we might be able to share the good news of Jesus with them, and they might have receptive ears. And that favor will lead to friendship, both with believing and non-believers, because we don't want to be alone. and we would love to have that sort of intimate relationship that God's given us at other times in our life, in places like Emporia, Kansas.
And I would add discernment. If you guys could pray for us to be discerning this, especially this next year as we move forward and hone in on partnerships that we think would be good mm-hmm. partnerships. Mm-hmm. And we don't, there's this balance of trying to be
Well, I'd say we know that the idea of engaging a whole city, you could be like a mile wide and an inch deep, right?
Yeah.
And that is a danger for us. If we don't do things well, we'll have a billion contacts, a billion connections, and nothing will come of it. Mm. That's not what we want. We want to have significant connections that allow us to go deep in a way that could actually strategically transform the city. Like, that's what we're aiming for. So we need discernment in order to have those broad relationships, but with a level of depth that produces real transformative good in the city.
Well, let me pray for you.
Thank you.
Well, Father, we do thank you for the Smiths. It's just a joy to have them back. And we thank you that Naomi is healthy, that Rome is making friends, that Josh is back from the dead and able to minister to others. We thank you that you've given them favor and friendship to this point. That you've opened up opportunities to connect with denominational heads as well as just people in the neighborhood. And we pray that you'll just continue to grant them favor and the friendship that they so desire, and that it might just lead to open doors, open hearts, and open minds so that the gospel will not only win people to Christ, but help people to live for Christ. We pray for discernment as they have a lot of opportunities coming their way. I pray that you'll give them a real clear sense of the deeper purpose for them being there, that they will understand what it is that they can really add to the Spanish church that will really strengthen it so that it can reach not just the immigrant population, but Spaniards within the country as well. So, Lord, we do thank you just for this time. I pray that they'll have a wonderful time celebrating the marriage of their son and, you know, to their future daughter-in-law, and that this will just be a refreshing time for them and give them some perspective and energy so they can go back and continue to do what you've called them to do in Spain. Pray this in Christ's name. Amen.